Tunisia's president wants more power. So on Monday, there's a referendum to change the constitution to do just that. Critics say Kais Saied wants to cement a power grab. What kind of political system does the new constitution propose? And could it lead to renewed turmoil in the birthplace of the 2011 Arab Spring? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Bernard Smith. Protesters in Tunisia say Monday's referendum on constitutional reforms is illegal. The proposed changes would sideline Parliament and remove most of the checks on the president's power. Opposition groups say it's a return to autocracy, as Kais Saied has suspended Parliament, dissolved the Supreme Judicial Council and started ruling by decree. If approved, the new constitution would end the hybrid presidential parliamentary system blamed for the political infighting that has paralysed Tunisia's post-revolutionary governments. Ressel Serdar has more from Tunis.
More than a decade after Tunisia sparked the Arab Spring uprisings, and now the country is to vote on a controversial constitutional referendum, which will be held on 25th of July. There have been several protests across the many cities in the country, particularly on Habib Bourguiba Street in the capital city of Tunis. So the turnout is going to be critically important on the day of the referendum, and these protests are being organized by the National Salvation Front, which is a combination, a coalition of the political parties against the coup, and they are calling for boycott. The turnout, the participation on the day of the referendum is going to be critically important for both parties. That's why these political parties, opposition parties, are calling for boycott, because they say that if this referendum is adopted, it's going to end the parliamentarian system, which was adopted in 2014 and turned country into a executive presidential system. And the critic says that this constitution will give full authority to the president over judiciary, over the parliament, over all the state and public institutions in the country. And they fear that if this constitution is adopted, that could pave the way back to authoritarianism in the country once again. Ressel Serdar for Inside Story, Tunis.
Now ahead of the vote, here's what people had to say on the streets of the capital, Tunis.
I will not participate in the referendum simply because it does not represent me. It is the constitution of one individual, the president. He didn't even pay attention to the committee that was responsible for drafting it. He drafted his own constitution so he can exercise his dictatorship. One of the chapters even protects him from accountability. How can I surrender my life to him so that he will not be held accountable? He is not a prophet.
I will accept this constitution, even if they consider it a coup. I support it. The important thing is that there is an honest person. I support this constitution, or the coup as they call it. I will participate in the referendum, and I agree with Kais Saied. We are with him in his victory over the Islamists and the new assembly.
It is not possible to talk about the application of democracy when people are hungry, poverty is increasing, and crime is high. It is also not possible to talk about real democracy before achieving food and public security, achieving self-sufficiency in food and good education. Then it's possible to talk about it. Many justify democracy without even understanding what it means.
Let's bring in our guests. From Tunis, Amin Sanusi is a political analyst and journalist. From Syracuse, New York is Mohamed Dia Hamami, a political scientist and researcher at Syracuse's University's Maxwell School. And also from Tunis, Zaid Al-Ali is a constitutional law specialist and a founder of the Arab Association of Constitutional Law. A warm welcome to you all. Zaid, I'll begin with you. How does this new constitution differ from the one of 2014?
Well, it differs in a large number of respects. So, first of all, it differs in the way in which it was written. The 2014 constitution was written in a process that was far more inclusive than this current text. This current text was written theoretically pursuant to a consultation and the work of a commission But then ultimately what happened is that when the president received the commission's work, a different version was published. So we don't actually know who drafted the final version. It might have been the president himself, it might have been someone else or a small group of people. But in any event, the consultation and the work of the commission had very little to do with the final text that was ultimately circulated. Whereas the 2014 constitution was drafted pursuant to a fairly long negotiated process. I don't want to describe it in too laudatory terms because it certainly had its own problems. But at least, at the very least, it was a negotiated text between rival political groups. That's on the one hand, that's in terms of how it was adopted. In terms of its content, the 2014 constitution adopted a hybrid model whereby the president as the chief executive and the parliament shared power between them.
Okay.
They both played a role in formulating the forming cabinet and also in formulating policy.
Right.
Whereas this constitution, the proposed constitution, establishes what's referred to as a hyper-presidential system, which is distinct from traditional presidential systems.
Yes.
A hyper-presidential system which establishes one person firmly at the top of all state institutions and the only decision maker in relation to serious matters of policy.
Okay, so, Amin, does that sound like to you that this constitution has been written with one man in mind particularly?
Well, yes, the constitution is fits the Qais Saied regime since last year when he grabbed all powers. It's, it was just said, it promotes a hyper-presidential system where the presidential is the sole ruler of the state, and he does not share powers with the parliament or the chief of government. And that's what worries the civil society and a part of the opposition. The fact that we are slowly going from this hybrid system, this parliamentarian system, to a return of the presidential system and a very strong presidential system where it is hard to find any counterpowers to the president.
Mohammed Deir, as Zaid mentioned, the 2014 constitution was passionately debated at a national level. But was there a problem with it in the way that power was split between the president and parliament? Is that what's allowed Qais Saied to do what he's doing at the moment?
I don't think so. People were complaining about the design that we had in the 2014 constitution because of the instability that we saw. But doesn't the instability of the last 6 years or 7 years doesn't differ that much from post-World War II parliamentary regimes or semi-parliamentary regimes in Europe? I think the narrative that we're seeing today that is putting the blame on the constitutional design is just some sort of motivated reasoning to find a way to dismantle what has been built during the last years and establish a new personalistic regime that fits Saied's preferences.
I mean, Zaid, there was this a landslide that Qais won the presidency with in 2019. Is he able to sort of claim legitimacy for what he's doing now from that landslide victory?
Well, I'm not really a political analyst, so there's not much I can say about that, other than to say that the legitimacy of the constitution should be distinct from his own personal legitimacy. So him as an elected president, he certainly has legitimacy within the system that organize the election, and his own popular legitimacy as significant proportion of the population support him. But a constitutional system should not be linked to the personal legitimacy of a single individual. So we'll have to wait and see on Monday how many people participate, what proportion of the population participate in the referendum, and of those individuals who participate, what proportion support it. And then we'll have a lot more to say about the legitimacy of the text.
Amin, is the president using the legitimacy, claiming the legitimacy from his landslide in 2019 to push this constitutional change through?
Well, yes, he is using his victory in the 2019 presidential campaign to build momentum and to gain legitimacy for the new constitution. While it's very different, because this is a long-term project, the constitution will be the source of law for Tunisian politics for the next 10 years, maybe, or even more. And that's what's different. And as we have seen during the consultation, the turnout was poor, but it didn't bother Saied or the government. And that's what worries the opposition, is that the turnout is a question and is an important question when you are going to establish a constitution. And there is no signs of the president losing any sleep over the participation on Monday. I think that in his mindset, he will impose the constitution, whatever the numbers are.
Okay. Well, I mean, Mohamed, the thing is this. For outside observers, the puzzle is often that in Tunisia, Saied's suspension of parliament last year, what many people call a coup essentially, seemed to have received widespread support. Why was that? And why does that seem to be still there, that support?
Yes. So, in fact, there was a preparation for what happened on July 25th in terms of media discourse, in terms of mobilization on the ground. And Saied framed it as a security event in the sense that he talked about the threat of violence between citizens. And he made his speech in front of the military. And usually when we have heads of state that make this kind of announcement, we have what we call a rally effect, meaning the incumbent popularity tend to increase, and it happens even in established democratic countries. The problem, however, is that most of those who supported Saied did not imagine that he would change the constitution or even extend the state of exception. And that's why we saw people changing positions starting from the first few months that followed the coup. But at the same time, Saied managed to keep a certain dynamic to preserve some level of popularity.
Okay. Zaid, there's no mechanism, as far as we can see, in this new constitution for removing the president. And looks like he can extend his two-year term limit if he wants, depending on the security situation. Is that a correct reading of this? Does this pave the way for decades of one-man rule?
Well, the only way to remove the president or even to control his power is through national elections. So if, for example, whether it's this president or any other president who's elected within the context of this constitutional system, the next elections might take place in 2023, presidential elections. And in those elections, if it's this president or another president, if within the first year it's broadly understood or there's consensus in the country that the elected president, the person who occupies the presidency, is incompetent at formulating policy and doesn't have any idea about how to form a coherent cabinet, then there's essentially nothing that you can do to either remove him from the presidency or even to control his power. Because if parliament decides to get to create too much opposition to the president, then what the president can do is dissolve parliament, which is one of the reasons why this system is not described as a presidential system, but as a hyper-presidential system. Because even if it's the president himself whose performance is problematic, who doesn't know how to formulate policy, who can't respond to the needs of the country, then what he can do is punish other institutions, and no other institution has the right or the ability to circumscribe, to control his authority, or to hold him accountable, to remove him from office. You would simply have to wait until the next electoral cycle, which could take 4 years, right? If what we're talking about is someone failing within the first year. So no, there's no other mechanism apart from things that might happen out on the street, but there's no constitutional mechanism, no.
All right, gentlemen, we'll just pause it there for a second while we look back and explain why we are where we are today. Now, Tunisia is often referred to as the only success story of the Arab Spring uprisings. The president's critics have accused him of returning the country to the autocratic system of pre-2011. Now, last July, Kaisi sacked the prime minister and suspended parliament. In September, he started ruling by decree, appointing a new cabinet and setting aside parts of the constitution. 3 months later, Saied announced a referendum on constitutional changes that would be held in July 2022, followed by parliamentary elections in December. So far this year, he's dissolved parliament, shut down the anti-corruption watchdog and fired dozens of judges. A draft version of his constitution prompted legal experts to warn it could lead to a dictatorship. So the president amended it slightly ahead of Monday's vote. Zahia, I also wanted to ask you, there is an interesting suggestion that the new constitution will drop references to Islam as the state religion. Is that a dig at ENADA, the main opposition party, do you think? Where does that come from?
So it comes from a succession of events. So what originally happened is that the commission that was established to prepare the original draft of the constitution, they floated this idea that Article 2 of the constitution, Article 1 of the constitution that provided that that Islam is a state religion and so on and so forth should be amended or should be dropped altogether. And that was ultimately maintained in the draft that the president finally published, but he added in a new provision, Article 5, which has its own wording and language about Islam and the link between the state and Islam. So ultimately, I don't know if this will make any difference in practice. I mean, you know, the relationship between religion and state has always been a little bit vague and unclear in Tunisia. It's certainly not as secular as some people have made it out to be, nor is it as religious as other people have made it out to be, also on the other side of the spectrum. And ultimately, what's going to end up happening is that whoever's in charge of state policy will decide whether or not they want to use religion to inspire legislation and state policy, or okay, to stave away opposition, political opposition, whenever okay, it is that they think it's convenient to them. But I don't think the current wording makes any major difference.
All right. Now, I mean, high unemployment, high prices were key factors behind the revolution in 2011. Little has changed, really, since then. But there haven't been these widespread protests on the streets against Saeed that you had back in 2011 against the previous president. Why is that the case, you think?
Well, first of all, I think there is two reasons. First, the youth is not really bothered with this election, with this referendum. We are talking about something that is very promoted with legal terms. It is very difficult to generalize in the public opinion. So it's really not a key subject in the whole population. And secondly, I think it plays a role that the protesters are not really free to do their manifestations and their protests. We have seen yesterday massive police brutality during the protest against the new constitution, and we have seen many political actors who have been injured or arrested by the police. At least 7 arrests yesterday during the protest in front of the municipal theater in Tunis. So this is interesting because it is such brutality we haven't seen since a long time.
Okay.
We have denounced okay, at multiple times when the right to protest was threatened, and now we have reached a new level of brutality.
Okay, Mohamed Dir, the protests on Friday, they were partly organised by 3 major opposition parties. ENADA is having its own on Saturday. Why does this opposition remain fractured and is not able to come together to present a united front? It helps Kais Saied's argument, doesn't it?
Yes, the opposition is fractured for several reasons. The first one is lack of trust. Inter-party dynamics of the last year, the last years, especially since the 2019 elections, eroded trust between Ennahda and those who are more in the center. And on the other side, you have those who are more on the leftist side of the political spectrum, who tend to have more ideological antagonism against the Islamists and cannot even consider working. Working with them. And Saeed is playing on that. In fact, he's using legal cases constituted by a part of the opposition to attack the Islamists. And they're fine with that, as long as Saeed's attacking their enemy, so far, at least.
Zayed, the constitution that Tunisians were so proud of, that they created after the Arab Spring, It's given several free and fair elections to Tunisia. It's delivered those, but it's not delivered, as we've just touched on before, the sort of jobs and the dignity and the food that Tunisians are looking for. Is there any hope that this new version, giving more power to the president, will make things on life any better for Tunisians?
No, I mean, the constitution doesn't say anything about those issues. I mean, at a very, very basic level, if you look at the 2014 constitution, the 1959 constitution, and this new proposed constitution, they all provide for socioeconomic rights. So they all theoretically provide for free healthcare and good quality education and other socioeconomic rights. But none of those rights are directly enforceable in the courts or through any other mechanism in Tunisia, which has always been the tradition here. I mean, a court will never receive a dispute in relation to those issues. And in 2014, that was not discussed. There was no change to that system was discussed. They only discussed superficial changes to the wording of those provisions, even though everyone knew that they weren't enforceable. And the same thing happened again now in 2022. There's no change to the system. So this constitution only changes the system of government. Previously, it was a plural system of government. Now it's a system of government where one person has a huge amount of authority for an extended period of time. But it doesn't say anything about what mechanisms, what means, what arrangements ordinary Tunisians might have to improve their socioeconomic status. It doesn't say anything about that at all.
So then, Zayed, can Tunisia still claim to call itself a democracy that has transitioned from dictatorship to democracy? Can it still claim that?
I mean, the problem with the system as it exists is that it depends entirely on the will and the behavior of the individual who happens to be president. The system as it's provided for in the proposed constitution makes it very possible, very easy for that individual to capture all state institutions, to determine all state policy and to remain in power for a very long period of time, completely unopposed. So if we're lucky and it turns out that the person in charge, whether this president or another president, is of goodwill and a Democrat and so on and so forth, then it won't be a dictatorship. But if, for whatever reason, the person doesn't want to behave in that way and decides to capture state institutions, he'll be able to do it not by violating the text, but merely by applying the text. The text makes it possible.
OK, so, Mohamed Dia, Zayed there suggesting that we need a good deal of luck for Tunisia to be able to succeed democratically. Do you see Kais Saied as the different president in the Arab world, the one who will not seize power for his own good, but would do it for the benefit of the Tunisians, of his people?
Yeah, I don't think he would be that different. Maybe the institutional design and the norms, the social norms will lead to some resistance. But if we compare him to other presidents who did similar coups, self-coups, autogolpe, it's very likely that he will end up establishing not only an authoritarian regime, but also a personalistic regime, in the sense that does not rely on institutions. So, for example, in most authoritarian countries in the Arab world, there are institutions that share some level of power with the president, either legally or de facto. Saied is moving toward an extreme concentration of power that will probably lead to policy inefficiency, political instability. And from what we know about this kind of regimes, not only in the region, but across the world, that personalization of power tend also to close the room for peaceful transitions of power.
Okay. All right. Gentlemen, we are unfortunately out of time, but thanks to all our guests, Amin Sanusi, to Mohamed Dia Hamami and Zayed Al-Ahli, and thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for more debate, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Bernard Smith, and the whole team here, bye for now.